Coming up on Life is a Festival.
2 years ago on the way to the burn is when Everland really came in. And we stopped in Salt Lake City and climbed up a big tree and Boombox and Joey and Lauren and myself all, we were just like playing some music and we're like, oh, it'd be great if we had a DJ up in the tree. And then there was nets connecting the different tree branches and we had a party in here. And then the ideas just flowed from all of us like endlessly. And I was like, oh, it'll be just like Everland. Oh, I meant to say Neverland, but no, I didn't. It's Everland. Everland implies some limitation. Everland is a place of infinite possibilities and infinite discovery. And the concept of really being a more outward-focused place than an eco-village, which is powerful and beautiful and important, but usually it's more the people living there and their guests. And Everland being an art park, being an event venue, being a place where people can come in to experience it, opens up that inclusivity, opens up the ability to bring about that impact and brings my event production experience more full circle.
My name is Eamon Armstrong, and this is Life is a Festival. This podcast is a celebration of thinkers and leaders who live their lives with the open-hearted, experimental joy of a festival. Each week, we converse in complete openness, in an ongoing quest to find those boundaries in our being and melt them into lofty horizons. Life is a festival, only to the wise. My fellow travelers, it feels good to be traveling again. I have left San Francisco and while taking extreme COVID precautions, because of course we must do so, masks and social distancing and all sorts of things, I have embarked on a small adventure investigating some communities. So today I am announcing a mini-series within Life is a Festival that focuses on land-based communities and projects where we can live a more expressed and full life. Now, of course, with a global pandemic and with general upheaval in the world, we don't have festivals, we don't have ceremonies, we don't have these places to gather where we can be inspired to be totally open-hearted and experimental with ourselves. Many of us, indeed I certainly have been, confined to our apartments, our homes. And so there are a lot of people right now who are looking at land-based projects and communities where they can continue this cultural zeitgeist of serendipitous convergence. You know, that special feeling at Burning Man where everything's kind of possible. Well, we can create that, and we can create that in spaces around the world and perhaps connect these spaces with each other. And there are a lot of brilliant people who I've met in my travels who are doing exactly that. And so starting with today's episode, there will be a little series about these visionaries, and it'll continue like Life is a Festival. We'll talk about their lives, and we'll talk about the birthing of these communities. The episodes will be a little shorter and just a little more focused on how we might ourselves build or join or learn from these different experiments in land-based experiential community. It's very exciting, and I'm honored to be doing it. Of course, I will continue with the longer conversations on personal growth through a festival lens that I have been doing so far, including an upcoming interview with Burning Man CEO Marion Goodell. And I know I've been promising this for a while. It took a while to record it. It has been recorded. I'm very proud of it. Just waiting for the right time to release it into the world. So, as the first episode of this new series, I am speaking to my friend Johnny Jenkins, who is a visionary, big-hearted, very tall man who is leading in the creation of a large-scale art park outside of Denver, Colorado, called Everland. And I had the privilege of staying at Everland for 2 weeks, and it is an early-stage project, but the land itself, the existing infrastructure, and what they've already accomplished is really inspiring, and you'll hear a lot about that on the show today. On the show, we talk about Johnny's commitment to community from his Christian upbringing to Burning Man and how a near-death experience inspired him to make his dream a reality. We discuss Everland's commitment to radical inclusivity, particularly in this current cultural moment, and what that means for a new project like Everland. We chat about some of the art and the artists that are already committed to the project and how your art or maybe an artist that you are inspired by could be nominated to participate. Finally, Johnny shares some of the unique challenges and the opportunities of the project and some of his original uplifting poetry. Everland was magical and very healing for me personally, and I hope to share with you many more such spaces around the United States and ultimately around the world. May we all be inspired to create a life like a festival, not simply for ourselves, but in deeply connected communities. And now, here is Johnny. Yes, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Johnny, so nice to be here.
Oh, Eamon, it's so good to have you here, brother.
I haven't gotten to do a lot of live podcasts in a while, and so doing a face-to-face podcast is really quite a joy.
Oh, it's a joy to actually have you on the land and get you to really experience this and to reconnect with you as well.
Yeah, we haven't seen each other in... We hadn't seen each other since Burning Man before I came up here, I don't think.
Around when I went out to Esalen.
You went to the Burning Man summit at Esalen.
Mm-hmm, in the fall.
And you went to that summit in part to inform the work that you're doing here at Everland. Is that correct?
More to learn than to inform. It was a kind of summit on building creative communities and taking Burning Man culture more out into the world. So it was a little bit of a incubator, you know, workshop type group that was super powerful.
How much does Burning Man inform or inspire what you're doing here at Everland?
Severely. Specifically, I would say it's the 10 principles of Burning Man that, you know, that we're inspired by. But for me, it's been a huge catalyst in my life, a huge transformation and opening. And a lot of Everland is the desire to bring more permanence, to bring lasting art projects and to bring the culture more into our communities and a little more accessible.
Of the 10 principles, give me one of your favorites and how it applies to Everland.
I think the one that has been a big part of the inspiration here and is more relevant now than ever is radical inclusivity. The burn is so powerful while you're at the burn for just people being whoever you are and no judgment to show up. You see such different characters connecting. But from a socioeconomic standpoint, we do lose some of that inclusivity. It's expensive to go. It's hard to get a ticket. You have to take off a lot of time off of work. So there's a lot of people that will never get to experience the magic of the burn because of their financial situation or their community. So being able to bring just a taste of whatever we can build here to a more accessible audience. And we're going to be a day park is one of our main offerings here that allows, you know, have deeply immersive experiences that are highly curated or just the opportunity for anybody to come off and to, you know, have a couple hours spent at Everland. So it really opens up that access. And even at a low price point, you know, in the future of $20, $25 for an entry, above and beyond that, we want people, you know, if you can't even afford that, well, do a little bit of volunteer work and come in and experience the life transformation of art, of big art, of story, of immersive creativity.
So we'll talk a lot about what Everland is in this moment and the vision of what Everland might be. But just to just set the table for our conversation, can you give me your elevator pitch? If I got like a minute to talk to you about Everland, what would you tell me?
Before we start, I just want to acknowledge the original people of this land, the Ute and the Cheyenne. And Everland is committed to showing up in love and support of these people and the indigenous cultures throughout our existence on this property. Everland is It's a number of different business models kind of put into one, but it's an art park is the main thing. It's bringing these big experiences into a permanent setting. You can kind of think of, you know, Meow Wolf meets Burning Man meets a retreat center with a glamping, you know, outdoor lodge. So we have 145 acres just 50 minutes outside of Denver. And the business model can best be described as stay, play, connect. So stay in the glamping village, the tiny cabins, play in the immersive art park, stay, play, connect through the retreats, through events, through workshops. So people can experience it on different levels, come in for the day, come in for a week, and really go deep into an experience. And the art park is designed to have story and theme, but to have a lot of collaboration. You know, one of the beauties of Burning Man is people tapping into their genius and them really getting to express themselves. But we need to tie that in for cohesion. So we're basing it around a compass that will have various trails emerging. And we are really inspired by Bill Plotkin and nature-based therapy from the Animas Valley, but specifically Sarah Gale from Zendo and Eleanor Hooper, who are both nature-based therapists, taught us about this. And the compass is our logo, and it's just about exploration and discovery. So we want to help people discover the human psyche and different experiences. So there's different archetypical trails that'll be emerging from it. So the East is the childlike energy. The South is the steward, the artisan, the creator. The West is the visionary, the champion. The North is the elder energy, the shaman energy. And then there'll be three zones: earth, sky, and inward. So the art is going to correlate to those different themes. So as an artist, you can create your experience and representation of those stories.
I love that vision. However, we want to start with you, because this is your vision. I mean, it's a community project, but this is something that you've dreamed about for a long time. This is potentially your life's work here at this property, or maybe you'll make this and make others. I mean, who knows? But I'd like to locate us with little Johnny. Did you have a dream like this when you were a child?
No, very different childhood. I grew up in a very beautiful Christian community with, you know, lots of shared parenting and just a good education, and on a small island. And it was
a small island,
the Outer Banks, a little sandbar off the coast of North Carolina. So it was a bubble.
I had no idea that you grew up on an island.
Yeah, my dad's a big surfer, and so I grew up with wind and waves and Jesus.
Wow. This property was formerly a Korean ministry training school, but this is not a Christian enterprise.
Yeah, there is many beautiful principles from Christianity. It's no longer a faith and a religion that I adhere to and follow, but it has changed and inspired me in many ways. And growing up in the Christian faith, it was about living a life of service, living a life of love, bringing people together, sharing, helping. You're not in the church community. You're not worried about social economic brackets and who's what. We're just kind of together. And leaving the church community, was deeply ingrained in it for a long time. That was a big shift for me, because I also lost that community. And really, I spent years traveling the world. I spent 8 years abroad after leaving Christianity, doing aid work in Uganda, and then just adventure travel through Central South America, and ended up in Asia for many years. And just, you know, asking questions and experiencing other cultures and what is their value system compared to America's value system. I was kind of like done with the capitalistic Christian America, and really trying to find out what I could do of service and what I could live for, because what I had preached for so long, I no longer thought was truth. So it's this very mixed thing of like, well, then anything I find is truth later, how can I hold fast to it? So I was very careful not to, you know, be preachy, so to speak. Say, oh, here's something I found. And I think a lot of that reopening was at Burning Man 8 years ago, when I saw a community that was not based around religion or politics or this, like, you know, dogma and doctrine, but it's based on play and showing up. And the way that people show up at the burn and like love and servitude radically rocked me.
Mm. You talked about this gap in your life where there was no community. So as a child, you grew up on this island, you were deeply involved in a Christian community, and then there was a period of kind of wandering the world without community. And then you rediscovered it at Burning Man, and now it seems to be a guiding principle of what you're creating in the world now. I think a lot of people have had a similar kind of path of feeling some level of community, separating from that in some way, and kind of going on a bit of an inward journey. And so I'm curious, what are the aspects of community that you missed most when you were wandering?
I think it has a lot to do with mirrors and reflection, being able to understand yourself in contrast to the way that others experience you. As a solo traveler, you can get away with a lot. You can justify a lot, and there's no one to call you out. Part of community is growth. Sometimes it's that harsh love. And then when you have long-term experiences with people, they can be like, hey, remember 2 years ago when you were this and this is how you came through it? Or this is a pattern I see. And just that pattern recognition from the outside is hugely transformational. And now I'm a part of some men's groups for many years, and just even watching the growth that comes from, you know, a brother calling you out and saying, hey, this is something I can see a higher version of yourself. And, you know, I want to be on the upward slope of transformation and expansion internally. And for me to do everything just through my filter is super limited. I know how often my views are challenged throughout my life, and I want my views to be challenged and want to come to a new realization. And by having deep relationships that are with you to love and grow, I believe we can heal and we can expand and we can find greater places of joy together. Mm.
I just did a podcast talking about accountability for sexual misconduct from rock stars. And one of the things we talked about was how a restorative justice process requires a lot of work, community, and a lot of time. And you made me think of this when you're talking about being held accountable. It's difficult to hold someone accountable when, you know, we're siloed in our little apartments and we don't know our neighbors. And, you know, it's hard to have that accountability. And as we move in our lives into leadership roles, we need to wrestle with these aspects of ourselves so that we can really step into leadership. And then, you know, we wrestle with ourselves in our service to others. And so I was just thinking, I love that the thing that you highlighted most in community was accountability. Because, you know, you look at the world right now and you're like, ah, come on, we need more accountability from everybody, right? We need, and from ourselves too, you know, yeah, as we're growing. And so I think that there is a desire to move into land-based communities, in part because you don't have to keep starting the process. It's a lot easier to show up if you all live together, right? So I think there's a real impetus to be moving into these land-based communities to experience the type of togetherness and community that we might have felt at a Burning Man or a mm-hmm. festival or something like that. Is that part of why you want to live in community on land? Is that a similar kind of process?
Yeah, I think land and just space in general, like a constant place to return to. You know, early in my career, I started in real estate development before I left America, and it was very exciting at first, and we're working in large-scale projects, and then quickly I realized, oh, most of this is just about money and buildings, and it's, even though it's all about people inside those buildings, there wasn't much heart space within development and within a lot, most people within real estate. And so that was also part of my leaving to let go of that. And in my waking up to come home to America, it was the epiphany of, oh, that, well, I can be back involved in real estate, but bring real estate for the people and looking at it from a people lens rather than a building lens.
What does that mean? How does one make it? How does one really center people in real estate?
I mean, there's so many different ways in the different sectors of real estate, but it's really starting with that from your intention. Like, what is the reason that you're doing this space? How are people connecting? What is the reason they're connecting? Is it to co-work together, co-live together, to inspire together, to unheal together? And then what is the form of that real estate that can serve that purpose, rather than most within real estate, and I'm still involved in real estate in many other ways, is where can I make the most money off this building? And even if that's, you know, a lot of times buying it and raising the rent, and it's not thinking about the people that are in it, and we maybe have to do that in a real estate deal. But when you reverse engineer it and look to the people first and that intention, I believe we can have more holistic places to live and work together. So coming back to really focus within real estate, I came back to America 5 years ago and started rebuilding community and made some great relationships with Jason Shepherd. And he had a big inspiration to start a kind of club with Jared Marquette here. And I was like, I'm in for that. Let's bring this forward. And that's
Archipelago, yeah?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so Archipelago, we started a members club around 2 years ago. And it's, you know, kind of like the business model of a Soho House, but not about business. It's about like mind, body, spirit optimization, connection, and heart space. And so we have a collection of venues that people pay a monthly membership for. And then we get all the free programming and content and get to use these spaces as our living room, as our maker space, as our wellness space. And the relationships that have emerged from it, the businesses that have emerged from it. I mean, so many, specifically to call out one of our best friends, David Champion with Maya and Unlimited Sciences, all came from deep dialogues and conversations that came from Archipelago because people continued to show up and people didn't live there, but community was formed around there. So I just wanted to reference, as we talk about land projects, even Everland, there is a handful of people living here to run it, but this is more, our vision is more open for people to come in even for short terms and retreats. And so it doesn't have to be a living space, but to have a, you know, a container that allows that consistency. I mean, Burning Man is that for a lot of us, but it's once a year and then we have our regional burn. So it's pretty slim, but creating, you know, even within a good friend group, a lot of times it's the woman or the man with the big house that invite their friends over a lot. So looking about how spaces can bring community and how we show up in service with them.
So you'd mentioned radical inclusivity as something that's very important to you out of Burning Man. And I think one of the pitfalls of creating a members club or something like Burning Man itself is that you're connecting with people through networks. And often those networks can be somewhat limiting. You know, how does one get involved in the network? Mm-hmm. How do you get to know the people to be part of the members club? And when we think about radical inclusivity, that has to include, as you flagged, socioeconomic inclusivity, also inclusivity around race, around, I think sexual identity is a little bit of less of an edge in a place like Denver. But I think race, for example, you know, Colorado is a pretty white place. How does one really create a radically inclusive space that also has an acculturation process such that it maintains the consistency of its culture? This is a huge issue with Burning Man, but I'm curious how something like Archipelago would look at it, and most especially for this conversation, how you might look at it in the context of Everland.
Yeah, that's an important question. It's something Archipelago is always looking at, and you know, we're taking so many deep dives within Everland, and we'll be a process of learning for long term. And that's one of the beauties of community, of other people calling things into your awareness of what you can do. From a high level for Archipelago, as example, as a member, you get free access to all the events. And as a facilitator, you can come and use the space for free. So there's that good exchange there. And as a facilitator, you can charge anything to your outwards audience or create your comps. And so new people are constantly coming into the space that are not invited through the members, that are, you know, a guest facilitator or experience. And we have all sorts of different facilitators come through, are constantly bringing new people in. Then we explain what Archipelago is, and then conversations ensue about if they want to get more involved. So there's an open format, and then the similar way for Everland, it'll be a day park. It'll be like a botanical gardens meets Burning Man. And, you know, that'll be very open for who can come and just spend the day with it. And then you see all the different offerings and all the different levels of how you can engage with it. So for someone that wouldn't be interested in a Burning Man, but might be interested in going to see some art, they might come here and then have their interest piqued to go a little bit into those deeper levels. And I believe, you know, for, you know, all races and social economic classes, but even the groups of people that are more closed-minded and not wanting to explore these other modalities, by creating an easier entry for it, we can allow those people to explore in whatever way feels comfortable to them. And for, you know, race, and that's obviously something that's, you know, been even so much more heightened lately. And I'm so appreciative that as we get to be a new entity, we get to take even so much more caution and awareness and questioning and trainings about how we can incorporate those into Everland. And We're, you know, being strategic with specific programs, specific scholarships, but really tying into different community outreach programs that are already happening in Denver rather than us reinventing those outreaches or those networks, you know, for groups of people of color that are artist groups, and then getting to bring them in to do art projects. And our first art that's going to be created is by a non-binary person of color, and they are wanting to do a scholarship program for other people of color to get involved with building.
Who is that?
Tigre Bailando.
I asked who that was because I already knew who that was. Oh. We met at Lightning in a Bottle, and then I saw them again at the Mogadou Institute in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where Genevieve Sophia Dow teaches, who has been on this podcast twice and has been a powerful spiritual teacher of mine. So yeah, I know them. They are really a magical artist. So what you're saying here is that you are taking these proactive steps. This is something that I feel like in sort of the broader festival culture, it's something that it's incumbent upon me to kind of like pretty much bring up in every conversation now, to just say, okay, well, how are we thinking about this? What are we doing? Like, how do we include without tokenizing? How are we proactive to create a space where not only we say all are welcome, but we actually create a space where all really do feel welcome, where it doesn't feel like a quote white space, even though we're saying all are welcome. So when we're talking about radical inclusivity, you can't just decide you want to be radically inclusive. You actually have to weave it into an organization, and you actually have to get some outside support to do that. You know, we don't understand our unconscious biases. That's why they're unconscious. You know, that's a big part of the problem is you create a new thing with unconscious bias, and then it replicates some of the old things. So I'm curious, how have you compensated for perhaps your own unconscious biases, perhaps the organizations? Like, have you brought in or have you had friends who've supported you in really weaving into the organization itself a position on anti-racism?
Thank you. Yeah, there has been a lot of learning for us to do, a lot of acknowledgement of our ignorance, and that's no justification. So there's been re-education process that's been happening from online resources, and there's a lot of misinformation. I'm so thankful for my dear friend Ethos, who has shown up so huge for us in helping things come into our awareness. They're a non-binary person of color and a brilliant activist, and they've helped us be turned on to a number of resources, and we have a lot of learning to do, and we're not perfect, but you know, we're committed to show up. And we're thankful for the accountability within community to learn collectively.
Let's get back to the founding of Everland.
But so I'm living in Taiwan for the 5 years preceding this, and came back from Burning Man and started to help host the first burner gatherings in Taiwan. I had a large events and production company and went deeply into free creative co-created parties that were off-grid, up in the rainforest, on the waterfall, and that was just made me come alive in so many more ways. And rather than me doing a production with my events company, it was, we all are doing this production. And you want to come, and what are you going to do? What's your gift? And then people, I don't know, and getting to dive in and help people find something. Well, do you want to give away some candy, or you want to help refill the water? And some very simple things. And when people get to engage in an event and become part of the creator, typically you have a much deeper experience than when you just show up and look at something, when you get to participate. And so that was a big part of, you know, shifting towards wanting more of my work to be within that realm. But things were very, you know, full throttle in Taiwan, and I wasn't planning to leave for any period. And but also loved adrenaline and throttle, and was racing motorcycles, and at 200 kilometers an hour, clipped the edge of a bridge and flew three stories off, and luckily landed in some couple feet of water. But I should be dead or paralyzed, and that saved my life. And I couldn't walk for months, was in the hospital for weeks, and that was a big, big pattern disruption. Like, am I going to keep doing the things that I'm doing here? And, you know, I speak Chinese like a child, so I'm limited in, you know, ability to be articulate and to really dive deep into certain things there. And, you know, in that recovery process, began to really release some of the things that I was holding on to tightly there and reconsider going back to America, where I'm deeply trained in real estate and don't want to go back to America because I don't want to work in money and be this alpha male and aggression. I want to like work in creativity and play and community. And I had this vision of going back to real estate in order to bring community, and saw these tree houses and this really collaborative, fun, playful space in nature. And at first I was like, okay, that's an eco village. I'm going to go build an eco village somewhere. And that kind of was what allowed me to start releasing from Taiwan. And then when I had to stop everything and just be in the bed for all that time, really come to a center. And that's, you know, near-death experiences are, I mean, it was one of the hardest, was the hardest time of my life and was one of the most transformational and powerful. And I have such gratitude for that, that shift that it released. So I moved to Denver just on a hunch of being here. Immediately fell into amazing community that I was so blessed through Burner Networks, and immediately started the search for land. Just looking all over Colorado and then also Costa Rica and looking at more tropical places, and almost left at points to go down to Costa Rica. And there's a lot of great things happening in Costa Rica already. And after a community was starting to be built here, I was like, man, I want to be involved in the Front Range. I want to bring something, some of this power that we're seeing more internationally to America, or to even central, the center of America. But I found this land a couple months after moving here, you know, 4.5 years ago. And it went on market and then off pretty immediately because the Korean board, the children of the father who had died, had they were renting it out to a tenant. The tenant got it under contract through seller finance. And so I kept looking for land for years. And I got back involved in real estate here. So I was really tuned into the commercial real estate market and looked at every retreat center and weird church and warehouse and, you know, nice big homes with lots of land. Nothing compared to this property. You know, the proximity to Denver, the access, the amount of buildings, the infrastructure, the beauty, the water. And as I kept looking at everything else, it's just like, that's it. And I kept texting. I got the owners, tracked down the owner's information, and I called them and texted them and emailed them for years. And I'd get little responses. And through that time, the vision kind of emerged as I went to study a lot more communities and try to understand what this was going to be. And 2 years ago, on the way to the burn, is when Everland really came in. And we stopped in Salt Lake City and climbed up a big tree, and Boombox and Joey and Lauren and myself, all we were smoking a joint and just like playing some music. And we're like, oh, it'd be great if we had a DJ up in the tree. And then there was nets connecting the different tree branches, and we had a party in here. And then the ideas just flowed from all of us like endlessly. And I was like, oh, it'll be just like Everland. Oh, I meant to say Neverland, but no, I didn't. It's Everland. Everland implies some limitation. Everland is a place of infinite possibilities and infinite discovery. And the concept of really being a more outward-focused place than a eco-village, which is powerful and beautiful and important, but usually it's more the people living there and their guests. And Everland being an art park, being an event venue, being a place where people can come in to experience it, opens up that inclusivity. Opens up the ability to bring about that impact and brings my event production experience more full circle.
I love the DJ in the tree. You got some plans to put a DJ booth in one of these beautiful big ponderosa pines up here?
Oh man, all kinds of plans to put things up in the trees, you know, where I'm so into the tree houses and the tree nets. Tree Net Willie is just a genius for making lounge spaces out of weaving paracord and just weird. We want to put up like weird suspended structures and kind of the vibe of like a little dystopian, but more like Lost Boy or Swiss Family Robinson, like you kind of build from a shipwreck. So it's a good utilization of materials. We're upcycling lots of things. We're not doing new construction and having to have all these clean lines. It looked, you know, it's kind of if, you know, a bunch of 12-year-olds got together but had engineers and architects to help them build something strong, and then they just went wild in their play space. So the structures are designed to be played on and not just sat in.
I love place. During my time at Fest 300, as you know, I got to travel the world going to these different festivals, and I loved being in these different environments. And how does one make a festival in that environment? How do you, you know, a festival on a river, a festival on a lake, a festival in the outback, a festival in the steaming Mayan cenotes, you know, outside of Tulum? What does it look like when these themes kind of arise? And you haven't been here that long, and there's already beginning to feel like, you know, there's that beautiful swing that you got there that was put up by an arborist. There's the netting lounge space you talked about, another tent-style lounge space, beautiful pond right in the middle. with all ducks. And I go and meditate. I've been here 2 weeks and I meditate at the pond every morning. It seems like this space is really a forest playground. It's very much a forest with this kind of central pond. And I love that you are so excited about the trees. I'm curious, in terms of looking at the artist that you're wanting to bring here to Everland, if there's an artist listening right now, what kind of art are you trying to bring out here? Who should apply to be here? Who have you already been looking at? How are you creating this Swiss Family Robinson Lost Boys aesthetic in terms of the grant that you are providing for artists to come?
Thank you. I love getting to talk about the art. It's so excited. And this is a place of collaboration and getting to let people really dream their deepest desires. And rather than, hey, it's this top down, here's what we're making. Who's the team that can make our plans? We're like, here's what we have so far and who comes in and fits into that. From a high level, you know, I kind of talked about the art park layout a bit with the various trails, but we're really into story, into mystery, into connecting the different pieces together. So we invite the artists to collaborate, and we're working with some brilliant storytellers. Tyson Ayers, who I'll mention again for his project, is coming in with a lot of creative inspiration on the way that we will tie all the pieces together and making it a journey of exploration. So they'll, besides the art, there'll be plaques and laser cut signs with poetry and prompts and questions. And it might just be a little nest that you sit down with someone, but inside that nest, the object is to ask the other person what their favorite thing is about themselves. So everyone who goes into it has a heartfelt moment and kind of drop in. So it's a simple build with materials that we have on site, but then a profound moment. And so the more that the art can be centered around connection or thought or discovery, the higher interest it is for us. You know, when there's a piece that has something, we encourage the artist to tell that story, to write that down. So as someone comes up to the piece, that they can begin to understand more what that artist's message is and what they're trying to bring forward. We have had, you know, so many artists call other artists to call other artists to collaborate. And it's been beautiful to watch the process of magnetization and rather than us going out and trying to find, it's people being called towards the project. And some of our early art, like I mentioned, Tigray is going to be creating, a large bear that'll be for the North Trail, the Elder's Path, the Path of Wisdom. And it's going to be made from materials mainly found on the property. And, you know, all this fallen wood art, you can go inside it and it's a place to be held and a place to talk about ancient memories. And Tyson is going to be building our sound shrine. Built an incredible one at the Burn last year, the Shrine of Sympathetic Resonance. And our sound shrine here is going to have a roof that's a wind harp that'll blow at different frequencies to make resonance. And the sides will all be deconstructed piano innards tuned to the frequency of the earth. So it's an interactive art piece that you can go and you can play and you can make music and we can vibrate in resonance together. And that'll be in the inner resonance zone. And there'll be more interactive art pieces and kind of a sound garden that emerge around that space. Selva, an Italian artist, one of the founders of Cosmic Convergence, has been here planning out her labyrinth, nature mandala. That'll be an ode to Pachamama, and it'll be made from 90% or more of materials found here. It'll be a lot of living structures and things that she'll be replanting in these gardens that have little nooks and places to gather. So as much as the art can create a sense of space and place as well, rather than just, hey, I look at it, but I can go be with that art. You know, for me, a lot of the profound moments at a Burn or the festivals are when I go just drop in and sit down with some place and someone wanders over and we get into the deep dialogue. So creating prompts around those art. We have Lost Creations, who are very, you know, reminiscent of Lost Boys with their name, and they're kind of dystopian, and they'll be making Around the Compass Village. That'll be these little shacks and towers and weird spaces that are whimsical and, again, like a lot of upcycled type of materials, but there'll be a lot of story, and they create a format for immersive theater and immersive play. The compass in the center is a surprise and secrets, and Corey Glenn, the founder of Incendia at Burning Man, has put a proposal that has blown our minds, that is super exciting. It gets unlocked through some special interaction pieces. So we have a really high value system on, like I said, smart utilization of resources. I love the ephemeral quality of the burn. And when we burn it down, it's so powerful and magic. And we're kind of going for the opposite of that. We're going for permanence here. Now, that's not one thing that we're actually trying to mimic. We don't want fires here. We're in a big forest and that's pretty dangerous. So we want art that stays up. And when an artist spends so much time creating it, we want it to be experienced not just for this weekend or this summer, but for years. And what we're creating at Everland is to be here for years and for generations. We're really making something as a legacy project and not trying to go for a big one-off, but trying to really set the proper groundwork with the way that we build our art, the way that we connect with the community, to make something that can have a real long, permanent, lasting change.
I have an artist to recommend for you.
Please.
Do you know Hoodie?
I do.
Hoodie Salinas has made beautiful stages at festivals around the world, beautiful Jaguar stage at Envision, always out of found wood, often driftwood at these tropical events. I don't know if you're personally know him personally, but
we've been talking, yeah. And I think in the future, at some point, there definitely will be. Tigray was also co-builder in the Jaguar stage, and Art Zeiss, another one of our early artists, is going to be, he has helped Hoodie on other projects, and he's going to be building us these little like teardrop nooks and nature nests that you can kind of get inside. And I think on the art too, another important thing for us is what art is already created. And we're going to be creating a lot of custom pieces to tell stories, but there is so much art from the burn and from other festivals that are in storage the rest of the year. And we invite artists that have a piece to reach out to us. And whether you want to have it have a short-term life at Everland and bring it back to a festival in the future, or you want it to have a long-term home, we want to bring about exposure to those artists, not just, you know, on the property with everything being well documented, but we'll create an online catalog of all the art and who created the art and how you can reach them. So as other people go to build creative projects, they can have an easy reference and say, oh, look at this stuff here at Everland that we love. Who made that? And they can go direct to book them for more opportunities.
So I'm sure the listener probably has the same question in mind that I'm about to ask you. How do you pay for it? Right? You know, how do you, I mean, you are leasing this property, as I understand, mm-hmm. With the potential to buy it in the future. So there's the expense of the property. There's the expense of just maintaining the property. There's building all of this stuff. There's paying the artists themselves. And eventually this will open up as an art park and hopefully, you know, become profitable, become financially sustainable, be able to build and grow. But it does seem like a pretty mammoth undertaking. How do you pay for it?
It is a big undertaking and it keeps getting bigger, but it's my life's purpose. And all those who are on the project are so happy to give up whatever else we were doing to bring this to existence. First mentioning the land. Yeah, we have an option to purchase it that we're planning either to execute sooner or later based on a number of things within our strategy. But the long-term goal, even if we restructure it soon, I'd love to raise money and put it in a trust and donate it back for it to be for the people forever. And there's no, someone say, oh, I need this certain return to make it work. Like ultimately, if this could be, you know, a nonprofit, it could be a nonprofit, but it's also a little difficult to raise money for a nonprofit, especially in this time. But speaking to the nonprofit, you know, we created a model that can not only be sustainable, but can be abundant in the long term. It's a big lift to get to that place of financial abundance. But the, you know, Meow Wolf business model has been a big inspiration of that art park, you know, and from a kind of more muggle term of, you know, amusement park, you know, is kind of what Everland's business model is mainly based around, of people paying for a day entry to come experience all these things and can go home after, rather than a festival costs a lot to put on and then you take it all down. This, once we build it, it can continue to operate and continue to bring about financial abundance so we can fund more art and bring about higher levels of creativity and collaboration over the years. And we plan to continually always build. You know, Everland will never be done. It'll be a process of, you know, an emergent process. And what we have the first year will help us dictate what we're going to have the second year as we open up the audience and the experiencers to say what they want to see and what aspects are their favorite. And as we have new proposals come in, there'll eventually be an open source platform as you come to say, well, what are the pieces that you want to see the most? And what aspect of the park do you want to see built out? But, you know, for starting to pay for Everland, we, you know, did an initial equity raise earlier this year, luckily before COVID. And then COVID hit and we bunkered down and got really deep into our planning and due diligence and working with artists and mapping things out. And we launched a Kickstarter to fund some of the initial art builds.
Is the Kickstarter specifically just for art builds?
The Kickstarter is first getting through a little bit of operations, but the operations is way larger than the Kickstarter, and then funneled directly towards artists that we have already started to work out, some of the ones that I've already mentioned. So I've already allocated funding from the Kickstarter to a number of artists, and we're still raising in that Kickstarter, but it was a really beautiful process to get to go so deep into the collaboration with them and kind of actually now get to vision and map out what is our first art that would be created.
Kickstarters are cool too, because they're also, I mean, you raise money, but it's also a marketing thing. You know, I was speaking to a mentor of mine about where I wanted to go as I was leaving San Francisco, and I mentioned Everland, and he's like, oh, I know about that. Someone forwarded me the Kickstarter. That's interesting to me. Mm. So I think it's been interesting the way the Kickstarter has also begun to bring awareness to Everland. And you've also raised a good chunk of money out the gate, like over $100,000, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, we set our initial goal for $88,888. I love the synchronicity. It's like five infinity symbols. And we raised that in the first 4 days. It was amazing to see that traction. Now I think we're up to 115,000, and I think August 13th is when the Kickstarter closes, and we'd love to hit 333,000. We have a lot of epic art waiting to be unleashed.
Well, this is a good time to plug the Kickstarter, because this is going to be released before the end of the Kickstarter. And so for a listener who's inspired by this project, give me the Kickstarter pitch. You know, in the time of COVID, why should I be putting money into this potential art park?
That's a good question. And Everland is an opportunity to put funds towards what you're wanting to call into the world. You know, if this speaks to your heart, if you are inspired by festival community and Burning Man culture and how we can actually bring some more permanence to it, this is an opportunity to do that. There's a number of perks that you can choose your level of what you can get back in return. But I'd say the biggest desire for someone to fund towards this is because they're, you know, excited about this being brought to the world. And additionally, there's legendary artists, amazing artists that are all had every event canceled this summer and for who knows how long. And all these people that we were hoping to collaborate with in the future became available and became free and are in need of support. And as we look for where funds should be put, that's why it's okay, let's get through some operations and fund these artists. It puts them back to work and it gets them to collaborate together. And, you know, while COVID has created such hardship, it's also created, you know, increased awareness. And, you know, more than ever, some of the things that we're bringing forth, people are asking for more, you know, outdoor spaces to connect with each other authentically, to connect with ourselves, to connect with nature. So it actually made our project far more relevant, and we need the support of the community. There's no big money behind the scenes that's pushing this forward. Like all of the investment and all everything has been chunks from friends and family and community that are saying this is important and I want to help support what's being created here. Mm.
Last night, because it's my last night at Everland, JoJo asked me what my favorite part of Everland was. And I was like, you gotta forgive me because this is a bit of a smarmy answer, but it's the people. It's the people. I would say it's the people in the land. You know, it's been really amazing to be able to spend some time in community, you know, with COVID precautions, with masks inside, with these kind of protections here. But to be in community has been really nourishing for me. And from what I understand, a part of how you're moving the project forward is doing some work trade. So people are coming in and supporting this project. And I'd love for you to speak a little bit about the Everland team, about the people who are here making this space come alive and come together.
Yeah, Everland is, you know, we talk a lot about art and nature and experiences, but it's all about the people. All of those things are to be for the people, and what the inner community that comes together to create it creates the culture, creates the heart. And there's no one in this project that's, you know, here for the paycheck. There's not really paychecks right now. It's a heart-based endeavor of what we're bringing forward. And I'm so amazed at the various strong team that has been brought. You know, Lainey Ohm, my COO, who is the backbone in so many ways of keeping things grounded and strong as I'm dreaming of the next vision. And she's like, okay, and here's practical nature that keeps us a very beautiful balance.
We need that. I need that balance in my life. Someone to be like, okay, reel it in. Beautiful. But you know, we gotta pay for the water.
Yeah. And that dynamic of a team flow, letting people and, you know, and encouraging each of us to be able to find our genius zone and contribute in that way. And, you know, Sophie, our program director, such an amazing creative artist, so focused on community and people. And
I'd met her at Burning Man 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. She took a ride in the back of my grandma's house art car at Burning Man 10 years ago. And when I came on set, I was like, hey. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, wow.
We actually also met at the Burn 6 years ago when I was doing the Taiwan temple part next to the man. And she came with her two sisters and she was pregnant with her son, Peter, who now also lives here. So we have our Peter of Everland. And then Tara, who is our systems and sustainability, and her high passion is maintaining this forest. And as we welcome people into this land, how can we still care for this land? We want to teach people about sustainability or regenerative design and permaculture. And it, you know, can be a little bit conflicting when you want to bring a lot of people into a space. So how do we do our trail design to not ruin the topography? How do we encourage natural flora and fauna? What is our smart planting?
And you have my friend Daniel Clausen advising on that as well, right?
Daniel is such a blessing and such Daniel's, a brilliant man.
Yeah, let me give a quick shout out to Daniel Clausen, because Daniel is one of the people who put together the Fly Ranch purchase. He's been a land trust manager in New Mexico. And actually, he and I have been collaborating on psychedelic ethics lately. So he's been one of my supporters and guides. He's a dear brother and mentor in my life. And when you mentioned that Daniel was advising on the project, I was like, well, thank God.
thank God.
Talk about land sustainability. Like, seriously, we really, you know, and Daniel was doing all the land sustainability stuff for Fly Ranch, which, you know, it's part of why we all can't go there, you know, because it's a delicate ecosystem with the hot springs out there. And it's just great to have some really learned people who are stewarding that. I didn't know that was Tara's role, was kind of leading that part of it. And it's so important.
Yeah. And, you know, Daniel, Tara, and so many others, as they show up, it's amazing to see how much we constantly learn as a team, because everyone shows up with their different wisdom and knowledge. And, oh, what did you know this about this thing that's growing here and how you do this, or this is how you can use this system. And we're gathering so much information. And part of our, I believe, responsibility or gift is, as we kind of document and understand what we're learning and going through, we want to open source that. You know, what is actually on the property? Why we're choosing composting toilets rather than septic systems? How we're doing our water flow and how we're doing our farming, and documenting those things that so people can walk through and get their own tour, but then also, again, putting those things online. You know, there's so many that are wanting to learn about sustainable communities and creating creative spaces. And the more that we can memorialize that information and share that online, I hope the more that people can take what is useful to them to go into their own projects.
And on the idea of sustainability and open sourcing, you mentioned that you were looking at a lot of communities as you were kind of birthing this idea. And I'm curious, what are some of the communities that you take as example? Where are you learning some of these things? Can you name some communities, some projects like this? You named Meow Wolf as one. Mm-hmm. And I've had Vince Cadlebeck on this show, then CEO of Meow Wolf. Are there some other communities that you're looking to, some other projects? And I'm thinking also, you know, for the listener, if they're wanting to look up and kind of follow your path of learning that led you here, what are some communities that you might recommend checking out?
Well, one that you just mentioned, again, Fly Ranch, that's been an inspiration of what we can do. It's bringing a permanence from that burner culture. You know, they're on a slower path of creation as they let it just be done very organically, like the burn grew of just, it's a duocracy, bring what you will with things that fit in there. And we're a little bit more of, okay, let's build and create and do it, you know, with sustainability and with caution, but we have different timelines. We don't have just millions of dollars donated that gives that space, but getting to spend time at Fly Ranch is powerful. And they do have a lot of information online that you can read about what they're doing and how they're doing it. And also, you know, Stephen Brooks has Punta been Mona. An inspiration, yeah. You know.
Had Stephen on the show too. Stephen and Zach talking about Fly. So far, nice. You've So far, we can ping back to when we have a Stephen Brooks Punta Mona episode, we have a Fly Ranch episode, and we have a Meow Wolf episode. So actually, you know what? I'll link all those in the show notes because all of them talk a little bit about some of what we're talking about today. Tell me a little bit about what you've gotten from Punta Mona, because that's a cool example.
Yeah, I'd say even before Punta Mona, when the inspiration's really coming in for this, you know, being at Camp Mystic also was an inspiration, even though that's a temporary physical community, but it is a continual community outside of the burn. The talks that they have together are so powerful, and Stephen spoke about creating communities and the various communities that he's been involved with creating or visiting. And one thing he said that was so important there to me that I then followed, and I encourage anyone else, is like, if you're looking to do a community project, go help with another one first.
Great advice.
Get involved in service. See what you like or don't like about what that is, because it's really important to hone in on your vision, because there's a lot of different ways these things can go. And he's working on various projects. I mean, the newest one for Allegria is more family-based and, you know, community and homes and big gardens. But going back to really, I believe, his first Punta Mona, it's this, you know, on the coast, almost like an island, you know, of Costa Rica, right next to Panama. And it's one of the most biodiverse places in the world, naturally, but also because of his many years of, you know, seeking out the fruits and the plants that, I mean, I've traveled to 60 countries. I love exotic tropical places. And when I was there, I had many fruits I'd never even heard of. He has like really created a place that, and that he has brought together, that's like the Garden of Eden. And there's a handful that go there, that live there, but more it's a place of education that people come and spend time learning about how, what they all do. And then people come for retreats, and you know, it is so luscious and organic, and you get there and you're barefoot and you just feel healed without even doing anything.
I want to go. I haven't been. Obviously, I've been to Envision, which Stephen Brooks is a co-founder of, but yeah, never been, and I would like to go once it opens up. Once they let Americans in, I'll head on down there. What are some of the most unexpected challenges that you faced in the early stages of Everland? Now, obviously, the financing is a huge challenge, and I think anyone entering into this would be well to pay attention to that particular issue. I think interpersonal dynamics can definitely be challenging when you're creating a land-based community. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if there are some unexpected challenges that have popped up for you, things that the listener who might be interested in this kind of creating in this way might not have thought of.
I'd say two things immediately pop to mind. Maybe they're not unexpected, but not as obvious. And just, I cannot, you know, overstate how important it is the relationships and the people. And, you know, you look at a project and it's like, okay, this will fail based on its business model or the finances, but really most communities fail based on relationships and inner turmoil and conflict and setting a foundation for nonviolent communication, for open, transparent confrontation, and so that we're growing and loving together, but trying to really feel each other's energies of who we are within our different personalities, doing personality profiling and taking a lot of attention to studying that, because a couple, you know, chaotic energies can really seep through for a whole community. And it's the entire community's responsibility to show up for an individual who's going through whatever their trauma is and whatever their space is. And just really taking the time, and that you can't take enough time for the relationships. You could just only take time for the relationships, and it still needs to be that precedent, that place of love. And that attracts in what you're looking for and attracts in other, you know, individuals who want to create and show up in that way. But I'd just say the relationship component, and then, you know, kind of on that note, as other people are looking for projects to do, getting really clear on your value system, your internal value system, because some people want to create communities on spiritual intentions. Some people want to create them all about farming. Some are about play and parties or ceremony. And if you have a different intention, what you're wanting to create together, it's not going to work out no matter how much you love that person. A lot of people are like, oh, my best friends and I all want to live in community in the woods and do this. And you're like, oh, but he actually wants this and she wants that. So really finding that North Star of what you're creating. And for us, having a really clear goal of Everland helps those things come back together when there's different, you know, friction and personal dynamics to say, okay, well, what are we creating and how can we get over this and love each other through this to support that end? And second, I'd say specifically for this project is the continual balance of a heart space and a business. that never will be something that we can, you know, put on the shelf and ignore. And, you know, and even as we raise our second round of equity investment, it's, you know, making that very clear with everyone is like, this is an impact project. What we're doing here is a gift and is an offering. And it has to have a strong business model on it. But then as questions come in the future, and then there's a lot of give back, you know, we have a nonprofit arm already that we've started with, and that's the sanctuary of the inner compass. And that's, you know, the sanctuary is a safe place, a refuge, and the inner compass is your inner guidance and your inner truth. And so it's actually a spiritual organization, and it that operates the retreat center here, which the retreat center is fully operational. And, you know, bar COVID is ready to be booked out, and the healing work taking place there before and will continue from all the requests that we're having in. We'll have a retreat soon with Yaima, and it'll be breath work and ceremony. It's just so great to have that heart space. And, you know, in the future, we're going to say, okay, well, we could have this heart space event or this big corporate buyout. And what is more aligned, and getting to have to revisit those things because we're like a triple bottom line for benefit corporation rather than it's like maximize profits. It's about maximize the impact. And there's going to be decisions that we have to make about how we're giving back and how we're outreaching to a community that are not tied to profit. And, you know, one of the things for the Kickstarter, a lot of the different perks will include an entry ticket plus some cool little, you know, face mask or medallion or something. But there's a lot of people abroad that won't be able to come. So if anybody wants to at the end, they can donate their ticket to our scholarship fund, which will go to underserved communities. And we'll be doing outreach. And like I said, with some of our specific groups to bring those in. And the sanctuary of the inner compass, and this we'll have, once again COVID allows, we've been doing online gatherings, but we'll have some monthly Sunday sanctuaries where we come together and maybe hear from an artist about the way they experience life through art or some other inspiration, but it'd be always rotating who speaks. And then maybe we'll have a short sound meditation together so we all can be in the same energy zone, and then have a potluck, and then have men's and women's groups, or go work on the land, or go farming. And it's just a community space and not a business space. So how to balance that is, you know, there's no formula, and every project's going to be different. And for us, it's like just making sure that we know what that intention is, and then taking the time to drop into our heart and to return to our center and make sure that we're accepting capital for those that also want to bring about, you know, change and an impact into the world.
So looking back to little Johnny on the island, what do you think little Johnny would be most pumped about what Everland is now? What like if little Johnny were here right now, how would he feel about all this? What would he have to say?
He'll be so excited to play. Oh, man.
Play in the trees?
Play in the trees, play with the people. You know, Everland is a place to remember your childlike heart. You know, somewhere along the way in society, we're like, grow up, be serious, forget your playness. But playing is connected to like intuition, imagination, creativity, flow states, presence. So creating these little moments all over, and even as we work and it's head down and super busy to have laughter and to have that joy. And I grew up in a, you know, multi-generational community. And sometimes we miss that in the world. And here we, you know, we have elders who are supporting us. I want to specifically call out Ava Lene, who's, you know, founded the Ecstatic Dance community here, Rhythm Sanctuary, 12 or 15 years ago, and has been holding space and working with the Rise Music Festival and creating the Wisdom Village for many years, and other elders that are bringing in their wisdom and grounded energy, and then the children and the play that happens, and for all of us to be connecting together. And so for those children to play with other children and to play with adults and to play with elders, that's what they're supposed to do. And they don't have to, you know, be good and sit here and not talk, but they can be in their free expression, I think is what would little Johnny would be most excited about.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, little Johnny's right here. you're one of those people who I feel like really, I mean, you're a tall man. You got quite the wingspan. But I see little Johnny whenever I see you. That's one of the things I like most about you. Mm. And we're going to do one final thing at the end. It's a little surprise for you. But just before our last little final little moment, where can we support Everland? What should we be following on social media? Obviously, there's the Kickstarter going on. I think that's where we want to send everybody. But where can people do the art grants? How do people get synced up with Everland?
Great. Yeah. Again, like you said, the Kickstarter is a great place to go to learn more. And also the website has a ton of information. And we do have an RFP for art submissions that's open right now. I think we'll be closing it and then do different sections of art proposals in the future.
RFP?
A request for proposal.
Okay.
Where people can put in what their vision is and what their idea is. We also have an intake form on the website where people can say that they want to collaborate and co-create and really get detailed on what they want to bring and how they want to get involved.
Is there work trade available for people who are coming through this area? Is that something that's available at the moment, or is that more kind of like an inner group that has already been established?
Yeah, you know, Everland is not a big living community. And one of our perks is being, you know, 50 minutes from Denver. You know, it's a very easy drive out here. So we don't have a ton of capacity to have a ton of people living on site. We're about at our capacity. That ebbs a little bit. But we do have lots of volunteer days through the sanctuary of the Inner Compass where people get to come out and get their hands dirty, whether that's making art or building the trails. One major thing for us right now is the forest maintenance, fire mitigation, cleaning up this land to make it safe. And that's also collecting our natural resources. So whether someone's a skilled builder or just wants to come out and get involved, there's definitely opportunities for that. And they can reach out to us on the website with that interest and send a direct email. And again, for artists, you know, we're going to be creating tons of new things, but if you have something that's created that you would be interested to explore and discuss bringing out here, please email us on the website directly and include what that piece is. And then we'll continue that conversation from there. But this is build week. This summer is build week, and we'll be continuing to build for a long time. But it's a magic time of the burn that only a few people get to experience, or a smaller percentage get to experience. But when you come before the burn and actually get to be a part of creating that aspect, we all create during it, or most of us create during it. But you really get to create a different bond with the people, and you get to be in that grassroots aspect. And we are a grassroots organization. So if you're wanting to just show up in service, we welcome that, and we need that help. So I guess, and lastly, again, the retreat center is bookable. So if people are wanting to come, it's able to be booked for weekend retreats for 25 people, 13 private rooms and a sauna, and then access to all of Everland. So if there's someone has that interest, they can also reach out on the website with that request.
Johnny, in addition to being a land art park community visionary, you are also a poet. Mm. I would be very surprised if there is not a Johnny poem about Everland. Is there a Johnny poem about Everland?
There's kind of two-ish. There's one right at the beginning when the idea really came in for Everland. And then there's one that I just recently wrote that's more about COVID and racial inequality and our need to just be the solution that we need to. And so it's kind of showing up, which Everland is doing what we can to show up into that. So maybe I'll let you choose which one. One more, a little more art and creative focused, or one a little bit more of the time focused?
I'm going to go with the art and creative focus because we're launching the project here. We're focusing on art. And really, I feel like this is how we can bring this whole interview right to the listener who wants to create something like Everland, who wants to be a part of Everland, who dreams of living a life like a festival, beyond a festival, out in the world. And so with that in mind, I'll have you just take us away with your poetry.
Thank you, Eamon. You are a truly magical being. And right now you're only seeing what you've done so far. But you are capable of far more than you've ever imagined. So never let yourself be limited by some clever notion of self-created restrictions that have no bound over you. The unique expression that only you are able to be serves in setting you free, releasing you from the monotony and the drudgery that conformity tries to demand. So I speak over you, infinite creativity bubbling up inside. Released from captivity of a constraining society, receptivity heightens as you open up and simply receive. Breathe. and let your beauty flow and spill out. Free from doubt, worry, or concern, we unlearn our limiting beliefs, moving past our furthest reach, breaching barriers that held us back before. Let us explore the unending depths of possibility, exalting your originality. We take joy in the unique expression of you, exceptionally unusual, bizarre, and strange. Let your freak flag fly and be liberated from feeling shy. Set free from the fear of man, no longer concerned with their opinion, but simply on a quest to expand and be all that can be dreamed. We are indeed redeemed. You are my inspiration. And you've been instrumental in the causation of my motivation to be all that I can be, a cessation of the lack mentality. I ask you, what will be your creation modality? Moving past marginality, no longer caught up in a loop of triviality, letting your personality shine bright as we touch immortality. You are greater than you, and the only limits that hold you back are the ones you self-impose. And I propose that you are both your greatest hindrance and your savior, and your behavior is indicative of that which you believe. Choosing to let go of the myth that I am not enough. I am more than enough. I am all I need. I am everything. I am. You are. We are. Exceedingly, abundantly, beyond all expectations, there is no limitation upon what your imagination can create. So we liberate our souls from former paradigms, realizing it's time we come aligned with our infinite potential. Stepping into creative flow, releasing and letting go, and ceasing to know what will be birthed next. Following that excitement as an indication, a hint, that scent of your essence, vibrating stronger as you discover more of your limitless being.
Thank you so much for having me here, Johnny. It's been a real pleasure to explore this property and to be received with such warmth and joy by so many wonderful people. You know, shout out to the clown crew, Jojo, Mandarin, Kat. Shout out to everybody on the property, everybody who's made this stay here so wonderful.
Shout out to Miguel, Aaron, Dante, just showing up in such beautiful, humble service.
Yeah, it's really such a wonderful vision and a really great opportunity to put something out in the public about what could be possible as many of us seek to flee our small city apartments and dream big in this time of enormous upheaval. And thank you for your leadership and vision here. Thank you for prioritizing inclusivity and being mindful of real outreach. Thank you for supporting your community here, building this great project. And thank you for your friendship. I really appreciate you.
I love you, Eamon. It's been so great to have you here. Thanks for this opportunity to share.
I love you too. Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you like the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor. Johnny, how'd the podcast go?
That was so fun.
Wasn't it fun?
I love hanging out with you.
Yeah, you know.
And you're just brilliant, and the way you can guide and ask questions is powerful.
Anything we missed? Anything that was like really present for you that you feel like we didn't get to cover on the show?
I think one thing that I just missed, just right at the beginning from the pitch, because I wanted to talk about what, but just the why. I kind of explained it a long story, but just in the real quick high level, I talked about, you know, a place for childlike play. Two, it's a place to really inspire creativity, whatever that is, but just to come and bring that out to your place, to your home. And then to provide a place to make community through co-creation, through making. And then fourth, which was strong before, but even stronger now through COVID, is a place for healing. there's so much, you know, mental health, stress, anxiety, depression that has been heightened through all the things we're dealing with now. And we want to, you know, do this to be able to be of service in those main four categories.
Beautiful. Well, so you shall. And I'm excited to see how this all blossoms and develops and swing back here in various stages of its maturation. So thanks for having me, man. I love it here.
I love you too, brother.